It turns out that political intransigence is by no means confined to Capitol Hill. Consider the study economics professor Daniel B. Klein conducted in 2010 that found that conservatives knew more about economic policy than liberals. Klein wrote about it in the Wall Street Journal. Right-wing media outlets were thrilled. Left-wing ones cried bias. Was his study biased? Well, for his survey, Klein asked liberals and conservatives to agree or disagree with 8 economic policy statements from a previous study intended to measure something else. It just so happened that some of those statements implicitly challenged liberal assumptions, while none of them challenged conservative beliefs. So Klein and his colleague ran a second study, this time with statements implicitly challenging positions held by the right. That study found that right-wingers are just as resistant to inconvenient truths as lefties. Let's start with an example from Klein's first survey, the one with statements that challenged liberal dogmas. Quote, "A company with the largest market share is a monopoly." That's simply false, but Klein found that liberals and progressives were far more likely than conservatives and libertarians to agree with that statement.
That was one of the 4 questions, 4 of the 8 used, which I thought were not ideological. And that's one reason that I had confidence that these results were telling us something real. The progressives and liberals did quite much worse on that question. And I thought, this is just the definition of monopoly. We thought we were seeing, yeah, there's some that are clearly challenging the left, but there's some that we thought did not. And because even on those, the progressives and liberals did noticeably worse, we thought we were picking up something real. Folks on the left were extremely upset. They said the questions were biased and skewed. I thought that I was acting more or less responsibly.
What pushed you to do a second study if you were quite comfortable with the questions you'd originally offered and your assumption that they were non-ideological?
Honestly, I'm not sure how much it was a balance of the following 2 things. One of them is, well, we're getting a tremendous amount of pushback on this, and maybe they're right, and we ought to really see what happens when you turn the questions against the conservatives and libertarians. On the other hand, there's no question that I was doing it hoping that the conservatives and libertarians, especially the libertarians, because that's my side, would do well in the face of questions that were inconvenient for them. I was hoping to vindicate what we'd done by showing that, okay, here, now I've turned it around, I've made it sort of equal or symmetric, and look, the left still does a lot worse.
So you asked a new set of questions.
We created 9 new questions, and all of them challenge conservative and or libertarian positions.
One of the questions, for instance, was, gun laws fail to reduce people's access to guns. The wrong answer to that, the answer favored by the right, was yes. They agreed with the proposition that gun laws fail to limit access to guns. Which question bothered you the most?
Drug prohibition fails to reduce people's access to drugs. 89% of libertarians agreed that drug prohibition fails to reduce people's access to drugs, which is a very convenient thing to believe if you're going to oppose drug prohibition, as libertarians do. An overly convenient thing. I think it's clear that drug prohibition reduces people's access to drugs.
I was particularly interested in the question involving the value of a dollar.
Yeah, that's created a great deal of controversy. Even some of my libertarian economist colleagues have been challenging me on that. The question is, a dollar means more to a poor person than it does to a rich person. I think it's clearly true that a dollar means more to a poor person than it does to a rich person. But the very conservatives got this wrong almost 44% of the time, and the libertarians almost 31% of the time, whereas the progressives got this wrong only 4% of the time. So they did much, much better. The left did much, much better on this question.
So obviously the crucial finding in the second study isn't that it proved that people on the left were any smarter. They weren't. Only that everyone suffers from what you call my side bias, or what psychologists call confirmation bias. You want to give us a little clearer explanation of how that manifests itself?
people embracing statements that make defending their position simpler. You know, if someone who opposes the welfare state admits that a dollar means more to a poor person than it does to a rich person, that makes it harder for them to defend their position.
To quote from your piece, a full tabulation of all 17 questions found that no group clearly outstupids the other. They appear about equally stupid when faced with proper challenges to their positions.
I mean, the way I sort of pounced on the left when I had the first study, sort of the high confidence I had at that time, I think you could to some extent call my side or confirmation bias.
So after the first study, you wrote that, quote, governmental power joined with wrongheadedness is something terrible but all too common. Realizing that many of our leaders and their constituents are economically unenlightened sheds light on the troubles that surround us. Do you still feel that way?
I do. I do. And in a way, widespread my side bias shows how difficult intelligent deliberation is going to be in a governmentalized system. You're going to get, I think, more this problem, which is pervasive, is going to have larger effects.
So you have drawn from these two studies and the fact that everyone outstupids everyone else, that government just isn't workable. Spoken like a true libertarian.
There you go. But I mean, I'm actually serious about that.
Oh, I know.
But I mean, I think there's some sense in that.
Let's say we're all a bunch of apes. Is it better for apes to try and create a government or for them just to run around in the jungle without one?
I'm not sure.
That's a very fair answer. Professor Klein, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Daniel B. Klein is an economics professor at George Mason University. His piece in the December Atlantic is titled, I Was Wrong, and So Are You.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.